This is a previously recorded episode.
This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Tell me you love me. I need a good laugh. I'm holy water. You need a good bath. Whiskey and perfume. You had a nightcap. Now how about that? A perfect stranger. He's got a bullet with your name in the chamber. I'm body oaking, rearranger. You feel my danger. This I'm a bitch. Guess the last word. All your excuses keep coming faster. But your mouth cannot run my blaster. This time a bitch gets the last word. When you got found out, it's not your heart that my sights will take out. I'm pointing to you, sir. Oh, ain't you so cute, the way you beg me. You might get lucky, I'm feeling friendly. I might not shoot you in the glen, you're defending. Your shit's never ending. This time I'm a bitch, guess the last word. All your excuses keep coming faster, but your mouth cannot. September night, when you were rocking me, gripping me tight, my nails running up and down your spine. I never would have thought you'd drive a knife through mine. Remember feelings that we had before, pinned up against the office door.
It's Nooner time. Welcome to the Nooner Show. I'm Jay Dubs.
And I'm Denise Brennan Nelson.
And we are broadcasting live from the Detroit Sound Studios above Active 8 Gaming in fabulous Ferndale, Michigan. And it's hump day.
Welcome, welcome. We've got Mike Monroe in the house today.
I know. I'm a little nervous about him because I think this is going to be somewhat of a repeat of our Ninja Guys show.
Oh, not sure? Mike. He's cool, calm.
And oh, yeah. They were too.
Not sarcastic or anything like that. Money. No. I had to drag him with me. He was supposed to be roofing his house today.
Yeah. Roofies?
Right.
Instead, I chose yesterday in the rain.
Yeah. Just so you could be here today.
Yeah, just so he could be with us. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Thank you. We're excited to have you here today. And he's already illustrated a beautiful picture in our guest book for us.
Of you.
Of me, yeah.
I'm gonna
post that picture on our Facebook, or have our CEO post that picture on our Facebook page. So we'll share that with everybody. But yeah, thanks for being here, Mike.
My pleasure.
Jackie asked me, she goes, earlier today she called me. She said, hey, do you think he's excited about being on this show? Oh, I'm sure of it. Of course he's excited.
I'm getting paid, right?
Checks in the mail.
Yeah, that's right. Sure, you're getting paid.
Yes. So
just like our CEO's getting paid.
That's
and
right.
our PR person.
Right, absolutely. Yep. We've got to, we better not even go there.
Mm-mm.
So I have to give a shout out to my mother-in-law. She's probably not listening today, but I saw her this weekend, and she said, yeah, I've been listening to the show. She said, I think you're having way too much fun on that radio show.
She said that?
She did.
And you did tell her it's all work and no fun.
Oh,
and
right.
We don't even like the sip on this segment at all.
No.
And we don't really drink it.
No.
We just make it and throw it away.
We just recommend it for our listeners.
Yes, not for us, because we're about helping everybody else.
That's right. That's what we're all about, Jack, right? No, actually, I do have a couple funny stories I have to share with you. I know you're going to get a kick out of this, because you have wanted, since day one, to do a segment about our pets, right?
Yes.
I know, and we'll get to that. But this will help, okay?
Well, you know what's going to happen? By the time we get to it, the pets are going to quit.
Or be gone.
Yeah.
I know. Well, we'll get new pets, but I have to tell you.
Oh, nice. Is that how you do it? So you really do like your pet.
I hope your pets are
listening.
Just
replace them. I know.
Bella, turn the radio down. I just have to tell you. So Bob gets home from work last night, and hi, honey. And he goes, hi. And, he's putting his stuff down. And then Bella walks into the foyer, and I hear him say, hi, Bella. And I walked in there and I said, wait a minute, why does she get a nicer hello than I do? And you know what his reply was?
What?
She listens.
You don't wiggle your butt for me.
Why not, Denise?
And then I did. I mean, I wiggled my butt for him. What can I say?
So Bella has swag and you don't.
Well, she really, when he comes home, she does. She wiggles her butt like there's, like the Pope came home or something. I knew you'd appreciate that, Mike, because that kind of sounds like a Mike comment, doesn't it? Is that what you say to Colleen?
No.
Wiggle your butt, honey.
Yeah.
Honey, turn around. Let me see you wiggle your butt.
What's a treat?
You want a treat.
Wag your tail. Hey, my mother-in-law's listening, and I wanted to think this is work. So come
right.
on.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah. So let's get down to business.
Yeah,
okay. So what are you doing this weekend?
Oh, what am I doing this weekend?
Yes. I know. I want to talk about last weekend, but I want to know what you're doing this weekend.
Okay. So, I told you, John and I, we get our kids into the bars at a young age. I mean, we're really into a different type of parenting. And this weekend, we're going to make wine as a family.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
Pick out at my dad's house.
Normally takes more than a weekend.
Oh, no, but we're starting the process. We're going on it's only the weekend. It takes a weekend to drink it, but it takes a lot longer to make it. But we're going on a field trip to pick out grapes and learn the different types of grapes and everything else. So
how wonderful. Yeah. So have you done this before?
You know what? My dad's been making wine forever, and John makes it with him, and now Rocky's getting involved, and now Jen Paul's getting involved. And no, I just taste test.
Yeah, you're the sip on her.
I am the sip on her.
Well, and we should say, because everybody can't tell this, but Jackie's Italian. So
very Italian.
Your dad's got those roots deep,
sure. Well, that's what he did. He grew up on a vineyard. I mean,
really?
Yes.
So he's where?
Been in Italy.
In Italy.
Oh, yeah. So he's been making wine forever.
We should have him on the show.
Oh, that would be funny.
I'm visualizing the Lucille Ball version with them jumping around in the tub, squishing grapes.
Squishing grapes.
Can I be Lucy?
That.
You can be Ethel.
We're making wine.
You can be Fred. How's that?
Oh,
no. Actually, that's funny because Bob will sometimes talk to me like Ricky Ricardo. So that's kind of fitting.
When you're in bed?
No.
Ricky.
Only he says Lucy.
I hope it's only him saying that. Okay, now.
Mike had no idea what he was getting himself into. I do think that sounds wonderful that you're making wine. And
as a family, it's going to be fun.
Now, how long will it take?
Oh, it's a whole process. Like, you crush them, and then you have to let it ferment, and then, I don't know.
Just red wine, not
to. White. I mean,
purple.
All kinds. Yeah,
blue.
Anything. Yeah.
She doesn't care as long as it's fermented.
I'll drink it even if it's not. I'll definitely bring you some bottles of it. No, it's going to take a while. I mean, it's not. It's probably. I think it's like a year before it's ready to drink. I'm not sure.
Oh, how fun! Well,
what
we definitely
are you
have to have your dad on the show. I am going to the MSU basketball football game. I know where I'm going.
Are you tailgating or are you going to the game?
No, we're leaving. We're heading out about 8 o'clock, and The game's not on until noon, so I'm assuming we'll do some tailgating. Actually, we meet up with friends who have been, they've had tickets, and they've been tailgating for years. It's a process. It's, it's
the
a production.
Ones that do like the whole setup.
Yes. And grills now, and chairs and
but
games.
But are you going to go to the game? Are you going to see the game?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you are.
Going to go to the game. And
because I know it's about the party for you.
No.
No?
It's the whole, you know what I love? I love being on campus, any campus really, all that energy, all that young, you know, vibrant, especially if it's a beautiful fall day, which it sounds like it's going to be a little chilly, but that's all right.
Oh, okay.
That's all right.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and, you know, lots of good food. Yes, lots of good, you know, drinks. I might even take our sip on this.
This?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I don't think there's going to be any left today. So you'll have to make a new batch. Mike's already had two or three.
Right. Mike, what are you doing this weekend?
You said this is eggnog.
We also told you you're getting paid.
You believe anything, don't you? What are you doing this weekend?
What I do every weekend. I'm doing a show.
Oh.
Sorry.
Where at?
A show?
Saginaw Valley.
Oh.
Art and craft show.
Wonderful.
Oh.
He does a lot of those. We're going to talk about that.
That's my weekends.
Oh, cool.
But I get the whole week off.
Yeah. Oh, that's
work on the weekends.
You get to have fun with us on Wednesday, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, before we
head
talk
to Mike,
let's talk about last week, because Thursday we both had a very exciting day. Actually, we were trying to attend all these events together and realized that that's not possible. It was too much, so we split up the day, and why don't you tell everybody what you did Thursday morning?
Well, I headed down to the DSO, to hear the DSO, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. They put on a really special concert for special needs children. And it was just a really moving, emotional, just a wonderful thing. They're trying to do more of this. And from what I gather, and I don't know how long ago, but there was a concert in Sweden. There was a special needs person there that gave out a burst of joy, I believe. And someone told that person to shut up.
Wow.
It was disruptive, and it, you know, caused them to lose focus and all of that. And apparently
somebody in the audience
and apparently the maestro came, you know, said, "We're here to play for everyone."
Wow.
Well, it became it was world news, and so the Detroit Symphony Orchestra said, "How can we make sure that we're playing for everybody as well?" And
that's
one thing
so
led
cool.
to another. I'm hoping, I won't go into all the details, but I'm hoping that we can do a show on this. What the orchestra does, everybody involved with the Detroit Symphony, what they did to do this. It's just a great, compelling story. And, you know, really about having empathy and, you know, it's...
Well, and it goes back to seek first to understand before trying to be understood.
Yes.
You know, like I wonder if that person who said shut up knew that was a special needs person who loved music.
Right, true. That's a good point. And but, you know, Mike, you probably, I do a lot of presentations. And in schools, they are trying to incorporate special needs children.
Yep.
And I love having them in the room, but you really do have to focus.
No, all the programs I do, we have them in there. I want everybody to be able to get something.
Right.
I don't care. I mean, we have a lot of kids that have Tourette's. And to do your program with that is very hard, but you want to do it for the right reasons, so you barrel through it.
And it's great for the other kids.
Right.
I always feel like I watch the kids, for lack of a better word, the not special needs kids, I guess, and they don't seem to notice because they're used to it, and that's part of the problem.
Well, and I don't know, but I noticed that it seems like, you know, we always hear about bullying and stuff like that in school, but it seems like so many of these schools are starting to learn acceptance.
Right.
I know that at the high school that John Paul goes to, the girl that won Homecoming Queen is a special needs. And the entire school got behind it. It was very cool. It was very emotional. It was neat to see the students doing it, not the parents or teachers pushing it, but the kids
wanting to give her a great experience.
An opportunity,
And let me clarify what I just said. When I said that's the problem, I mean that's the problem with adults, because we're not used to it. We didn't grow up having special needs It's like when I did the Miss America wheelchair pageant.
Right.
One of their issues is that we don't know how to deal with them.
Right.
And we talk to them like, you know, they're dumb, or we talk down to them, or we don't understand. And I just think that schools are getting better at letting kids just experience it. Kids don't handle it. They handle it better than we do,
I
guess is what I'm saying.
Yep.
So,
I agree.
So, yeah, that was wonderful. Now, so I went to the DSO in the morning, and I wanted to come to Glam Meets Jam, which I can't wait to hear about it.
Oh, you got it right.
I know. I kept saying Jam Meets Glam.
I know.
Really, Glam Meets Jam.
That's why we asked her not to MC. She couldn't get it right. No, I'm only kidding. You were missed. But the show was awesome. The hairdressers did a great job. So, Bonsadello, congratulations. Amanda pulled the whole team together. They had some really cool fantasy hair. And Kevin Sharp from Metro 37 did a phenomenal job with the music lineup, the live music. John Paul opened up the show. But we had Sarah Fortish, young girl. I think we're going to have her on the show eventually. Really good. We had Molly Wing and the Chimps, and we heard her song. She's the one, the 16-year-old, that won the songwriting contest for No Resolve. Unbelievable. These guys were so good. There was another band called Rain, and they were incredible. And then one of our favorites, Through Our Eyes.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they were the headliners, and they just...
Kelly was there?
Oh, he was, yes. He was there. So, Kelly, if you're listening, we need to get you back on the show.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
But Annette, the lead singer, and just the whole band, they're tight, and the music was so cool. And they kept the energy going, you know, the entire night. Yeah, I mean, they had standing room only. Everybody up by the stage.
Did you raise a lot of money for the No Resolve, for people that don't know, is to raise money for awareness and prevention of teen suicide.
Correct.
Did you raise a lot of money for that?
You know, honestly, I don't know how much we raised yet, because we gave everything to them. So we, you know, it was like, here's
you
the envelopes
it.
Here. Yeah.
I need to do a fundraiser with you.
Yeah. No, I know. But so, yeah, and Dennis was there, and some of the members from No Resolve, they were there. There were quite a few people. It was a great turnout. And I was a little nervous because we had never done this on a Thursday night. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what a Thursday night was like in a bar. And we had a great turnout. It was packed, and energy was good, and everybody wanted to be there, and it was a good cause, and music is the universal language.
Yes, it is. And Rocky emceed it.
She
Rocky
did.
Rocky Veloz, who
she
is our our theme song that you hear at the beginning of the show. That's who sings that.
She did a great job. And by the way, Rocky is going to be performing at Freddy's on October 8th, and I think that's her first show back out in the Detroit scene with a new sound.
Really? Where at?
It's Freddy's.
I got to write that down. On October 8th.
Yep, October 8th.
At Freddy's. That's a Thursday.
Thursday night.
All right. Yep. You know, sometimes I think Thursdays are great nights because people are ready to get into the weekend.
Right.
But they're not as busy because weekends can, you know, you can get overwhelmed with everything you have to do on the weekend.
Yeah.
So, well, wonderful. I'm sorry I missed it, but like you said, we can't spread ourselves too thin, and
no, we can't.
I wanted you to come to the DSO,
and I know I wanted to be there.
That's all right. We represented both, and they did a great job, and I'm looking forward to it. So
good deal.
More of events like that.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing this weekend? Did we talk about that?
Yeah, we did.
I miss you.
Oh yeah, that's right. I miss you. How about another drink? How about another sip on this?
I'm going to the MSU. Oh, real quick before I forget, I wanted to just quickly tell you about Rachel. So Mike, you know Rachel. She's 18 now. She went on a 4-day camping trip up north, and they took. They were only allowed to take a sleeping bag and a flashlight. No cell phone, no technology of any kind. They took them to the spot.
Who's they?
It was through school.
Oh.
And there were different groups. Her group was 15, and there were a couple other groups of 15. But basically, you're with your group, kind of a team building, team bonding, somewhat of a spiritual journey, if you will. And they took them. At one point, they had to find their way back to where they camped blindfolded.
Really?
The head person had to give directions. So they would turn to the person behind. They all had to hold hands, and they would say, okay, take one step forward, and then you'd pass it down the line. And then
wow.
to weave through the trees and all of that, and they finally, it took them a long time.
4 days.
But they,
then they probably go in circles. They didn't realize it.
That's how I am at the mall.
Yeah, well, I wish I could, I need to go to the mall blindfolded so I don't see everything there is to buy. But anyway, it was a wonderful experience, we think. I'm not sure that she's completely on board with that yet, but a lot of amazing things happen. But here's my question. Could you go 4 days without your cell phone?
Ooh, no.
Definitely.
No. You could, Mike?
It drives me crazy.
Yeah, it drives you crazy, but you have your own business, so how could
you? I'm just waiting for the phone call that says, hi, I called you because you won the lottery.
So is that why you're holding it right now?
Roof, their toilet's plugged.
I know.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I would love to, but can I? No. It's not possible.
It'd be tough.
Well, you can't. If you own a business, you can't.
Well, you could turn it over to someone else.
Oh, they'll just turn it right back over to me.
Yeah, when you get back. Well, I think that's people's fear is that, oh, what will I miss? And
yeah,
but
when I go on vacation, I'll check it in the morning. Then I go fishing, do all stuff all day long, check it at the end of the night, make sure there's no problems. But as far as like people calling to talk,
you wouldn't miss that.
No.
No, you don't take my call.
What about you?
I think I could do it.
And so how did the kids do it? Because I think at that age it has to be really hard.
I mean, Rachel got home and she was exhausted, and then I think she wanted to spend about 4 hours on her phone.
They talking, use her iPads.
Talking to all of yeah. No, they didn't take anything. She said, you never knew what time it was. You went to bed when you were tired. You got up when you were done sleeping in the cold. They gave them tarps. They were allowed to pick from a bin all the things they thought they would need out there. And there were 13 girls at one point, she said, and they put a tarp down. And then they took sticks and put a tarp over them, and that's what they slept on for the night.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Tarp sandwich.
Yeah, like a tarp sandwich. And what she said during the day, they had seen a snake.
Ooh.
And she slept on the outside.
Ooh.
And she said a couple times she, had to kind of like bundle up and put her hood over her head so that.
What an experience,
yeah,
though.
There's so many great stories about it, but I was just curious about the phone.
Well, think about the phone. It's not, when did the cell phone got invented? It was 1973, I
really?
Think, the first
the
cell
great
phone.
Big honking thing
yeah.
you used to hold?
It wasn't, and they didn't start selling until, I think it was like 84 or 83,
okay.
something like that.
I didn't get one until about 2 years ago.
Yeah, no, same here. I still don't know how to use it.
Hers is a dial that still takes quarters.
No, but think about, how did we do that?
I think back. I mean,
we had businesses.
Do you ever see a payphone anymore?
No.
They're becoming obsolete.
Yeah. Wow.
I know. A lot of things change. I wonder if things will change as dramatically in the next 20 years as they have in the past 20 years. I mean, is that?
Right. Well, it doesn't seem dramatic anymore. I mean, it's like every year it's like, oh, the iPhone 6, oh, the iPhone
right.
7. It's like, who cares?
Right.
I went to get headphones for my phone, so I could listen to music. And the guy says, we don't use those anymore. It's all Bluetooth.
Oh.
So they're getting rid of headphones that plug in.
Really?
Wow.
I don't know. Huh. It is nicer, the Bluetooth. No wires, if you're jogging.
Yeah.
Not the wires off.
I've never jogged before. So what about typewriters? Remember that?
Oh, yes. Oh, and whiteout? I was thinking about whiteout
yeah,
the other day.
I still have whiteout. I still use whiteout. Yeah. I do.
No, I remember the carbon paper.
You know what?
If our young listeners.
This could be a whole
come on,
other show.
We're scaring them. We're letting them know.
Okay, we're acting like we're 90 right now.
We're
so
not
let's
90.
Quit doing that. 50s
right.
is the new, what do we say? It's the
new 20 or something.
No, 40s is the new 20. 50s is the new 30s, and 60s is the new 40s. So,
all right, whatever. So, I believe you. Well, let's come on. Let's get Mike.
Let's talk to Mike.
Officially
indoctrinated.
Into
we did.
The
we
show.
Gave him the sip on this
That's
already.
True. So, Michael Glenn Monroe, because if you go to, Google Mike Monroe, well.
It's some crazy convict. Rock and roll.
It's you.
Guy.
No,
yeah. It's a rock and roll guy?
It's my second job.
It is.
Cool.
It is. But so it's Michael Glenn Monroe. Michael lives in Michigan, actually Brighton, and his wife is Colleen, and he's got three kids, John, Natalie, and Matthew. And it's funny, I've known Mike for years, but I was thinking, what is Michael? And of course, the first thing that came to mind is artist. But you're so much more than that, really. I mean, you're a businessman. You're an entrepreneur. There's just a lot of things we're going to talk to that about, talk with you about that. But Mike has illustrated 26 children's books, including four of mine, I'm proud to say.
Wow.
And I still think Buzzy the Bumblebee that he illustrated has got the
most beautiful
pictures in it of all time. In 2002, he was chosen to paint the official Easter egg of Michigan. For Michigan, and it was displayed on the White House lawn, or not lawn, but listen, don't laugh
at
me.
You are butchering this.
Well, so wait, so how did that happen? Can we ask?
Well, I was just going to do an intro and then go back.
Okay, go ahead. No.
I'll fix it in a little bit.
Here's the thing. Yeah, like he always does.
It's all about recovery on this show.
That's right. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. Mike has done that. I guess that's what I was trying to get at. He has won so many awards. He's done so many amazing things. I think one of the things that really impresses the heck out of me is that you went to the White House. In 2007, you were asked to paint the holiday flyer by the Bushes. And you painted the Christmas bulb, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was given
You're
out.
You're getting close. It was a brochure, booklet, not a flyer.
It was Hanukkah,
it was
not Christmas.
Christmas balls, not a bulb.
Why didn't you do your own intro?
Well, wait.
I want to do yours.
Yeah. Well, I had it all nice and neat, and then you handed me all this stuff. It's like, what the heck? Okay. Well, forget about all that stuff. Who is Mike? You tell us. Who is Mike?
Dad, artist. I kind of make up my own job as I go. Never was thinking of getting into the kids' books. I was doing art and magazine covers for about 20 years. The books came along, jumped on that when my kids were born. And so I've done the books for 18 years now. And one of the things I do the school programs like you do, lectures, which is not natural for me. It's not something I love to do, but kids seem to like it. Go in there, teach 500 kids a day how to draw animals. So it's intimidating, but it's very rewarding when you're done.
I'll never forget seeing your studio the very first time. And I remember looking at your paintings on the wall and thinking I wanted to touch them. They looked so real. You really, your ability to capture what a deer or any animal in the wild goes back to when you were young. I know your parents were really big on the outdoors and those kinds of things. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my mom was a third grade teacher, and both mom and dad were good at drawing and painting. My dad was an architect. Just as a young kid, I used to go outside with my mom and look for animals. We bug collected and, catch snakes, turtles. I mean, I've always loved being out in the nature, and I love animals. I'm always intrigued with them, even to this age now.
And that's what a lot of your paintings. Do you still sell a lot of your wildlife paintings?
Yep, I do a lot of wildlife paintings. I've done about 200 magazine covers for places like Outdoor Life, Field and Stream.
Oh, wow.
So animal-oriented type of magazines. Okay. But, I've done a lot of, maybe almost 4,000 paintings I think I've done.
Wow.
And on the last year, I've been really concentrating a lot of landscapes, and that's gone really well.
I
have some of his wildlife paintings in our house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Let's go back, though, and start from the beginning. This segment is called What's the Wish, What's the Way, and What's in the Way? And this is the segment where we explore and inspire. And it's like you said earlier today, Denise, when we were talking, you said, the beginning of any pursuing any passion or any dream is easy, but it's that middle part that is really difficult. Like, how do you stay passionate and persistent and still believe in yourself and believe in your dream when you get hit with all these challenges? You've had a lot of success because you are doing this for a living, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what you do full time.
I've had a lot of success, but I've also had a lot of failures. And
so let's go back to the beginning. I don't mean to interrupt you there, but you started it at 16. Mm-hmm. You published your first ABC poster. Now, did you know that that's what you were going to get into? I mean, was that at that time a passion for you? Or?
I joke around about it, but I really wasn't a great student. My mom was a third grade teacher, and I was one of these kids that I built tree houses. I was in every sport. I wanted to do the boy stuff. I was out there, to have to go and do homework was like, as being punished.
Torture.
Yeah. So, you know, I did okay in school, but that wasn't my forte. But okay. Everybody seemed to really acknowledge that I was good at drawing and painting. And I loved it. I was drawing and painting animals that I found. And I just kept hearing it over and over. Then I would study and watch other students that struggled with it. So I kind of realized that maybe that was my God's gift.
Oh, wow.
To do that. And somebody told me a long time ago, it's an insult to God if you don't use the gift that you're given.
I agree
with
that.
And that stuck in my head. And I just thought maybe God made sure I wasn't good at anything else.
So you wouldn't miss that.
That's right.
Big old clue.
And were your parents supportive of
You know, it's hard because now as a dad, I do understand where my dad was coming from.
Yeah.
He didn't see that as a viable lifestyle or a way to make money. The one thing that happened was years afterwards, I finally won the Michigan Artist of the Year after about 10 years. I started competing at 18, won it when I was 28. And my dad came to see me at the competition, the major, you know, big money and advertising, everything went
now,
with it.
Now, where was this?
It was at the Capitol in Lansing.
And what did you have to do to
qualify? You submit a painting, and you can't have your name on it. It had to be a certain size.
Oh.
And so year after year after year, I competed. I think about the 10th year, I was about ready to give up. Because the best I did, I think it was fourth. My mom's like, I know you can do this. So I went in my studio, my bedroom at the time. And I put on some Christmas music, and I made this beautiful wintry setting with a bird nestled in the pines, and I ended up winning. So that was kind of the kickoff. But my dad came to the competition and told me he never realized how determined I was to do this.
Wow.
And I really didn't realize how determined I was till he said that.
Yeah.
And suddenly I realized that, yeah, whatever it takes, I'm going to make it happen. I mean, doing shows outside in the wind and the rain and the heat and no sales and – you know, losing inventory.
It's grueling. So,
yeah, it's a tough show thing to do, but I just think it, in my mind, for me, I would rather do a hard day in that than I would work at a factory.
Right.
It's just not, I can't do it. I don't know how those guys do it.
Right.
I mean, I've toyed with other jobs through, you know, my first maybe from 18 to 20 or 30 years old, and nothing fit.
So you always went back.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always stuck with it.
Oh, you stuck with it.
But I was trying other jobs, you know, to supplement doing that.
Do you still feel like you're doing your passion and doing what you're intended to do?
Yeah. I think about it nonstop all the time. You know, my priority is to provide for my family.
Right.
And so my choice is to do it like this, which means in my mind it's going to be not a 40-hour week. It's an 80 or 100-hour week. But I love doing it. So this is my hobby and my job. I just make the whole week around it. And, you know.
Wow.
Tell us a typical week.
Well, like I said, I do, like last year, I did 53 shows in markets.
Last year?
Yep. And I do is I do like in Northville, at the Northville Farmers Market, every Thursday from 8 in the morning till 3. So I'm there every Thursday. I get up at 5 in the morning, get there, get set up, get home about 4 or 5. So it's a full day of setting up and selling my kids' books and artwork. I do a lot of markets during the week. I do shows almost every weekend, which is packing on Friday, getting to the show, either setting up Friday or early morning Saturday, 8-10 hours, same on Sunday, get home Monday. So I'm home mostly during the week. And my time is my own, whatever I want to do. I'll get up in the morning, I'll paint. I go to my building downtown Brighton where I do shipping and mailing and correspondence and
custom framing.
Yeah, we do custom framing. I mean, I do so many things. I wear so many hats. It's a juggling act constantly, but I don't know. I feel pretty comfortable with the way I've done it.
So when somebody asks, what do you do? How do you reply?
I call myself the big three, me, myself, and I. I do it all. Advertise, promote, ship.
But do you call yourself a what?
Are you an illustrator?
I'm an artist. I call myself an artist because I don't just do books. I don't just do paintings. I've done sculptures. I've done murals for buildings. I've come up with conceptual ideas for people and maybe buildings they want to do the way they want decorated or something like that.
What's the difference between an artist and an illustrator?
Well, in my mind, when I say artist, it means there's no limit. Anything you want to do, any form, clay, rock, metal, welding, you know, sky's the limit. With an illustrator, they illustrate books or...
What famous artist do you admire? Or not even famous, but what artists inspire you or do you admire or have you learned from?
Well, when I was growing up, there's a very famous artist by the name of Robert Bateman. He's probably the foremost wildlife artist in the world. He was a teacher and then after retirement went into painting, and I've never seen anybody match his ability.
Really?
He's probably in his 80s now. I've met him. I've done shows with him. Very nice, kind of a quiet guy. That was always, you know, my hope to be like that guy.
Yeah.
As now I'm in my 50s, you know, I love doing the books. I never thought I'd do the books.
So let's go back to some of the highlights during this journey. For example, the White House. How did that happen?
Well, all right. My wife did a book called A Wish to Be a Christmas Tree, read on the Today Show by Katie Couric.
And how did that happen? How did it get to Katie Couric?
It just happened. What happened is that particular week, it was the Barnes & Noble number one selling Christmas book.
Wow. Well, it's a beautiful book.
They put it on the front of their website, the Barnes & Noble website. Every year, Katie Couric picks a book to read for Christmas on the Today Show.
Okay.
She said she went through the box of all the other publishers' books and couldn't find anything. So she just went on the website for Barnes & Noble, saw her book, called the publisher, asked for a copy. They sent it. I guess the next day she called and said that's what she wants to read on the Today Show.
Wow.
So from what I understand, Mr. and Mrs. Bush saw her read that on the Today Show and then called me, or actually called Todd Gavasi, the little professor bookstore, and asked if he can get a signed copy. So we signed the copy for him, sent it off. Sent a thank you letter.
So the Bushes wanted a signed copy, and you said, "Well, yeah, wait, I'll."
How do you say? Is that BUSA?
Yeah,
I'm kind of busy, and I've got to roof my house. But
here, let me. Wow, so, no kidding.
The first time I went up there, you know, then after that, I got the call to do the Easter egg. So did an Easter egg for Michigan, representing Michigan. Okay. Sent it to the White House. The funniest part was, they called me and they said, okay, can I make sure it's on this date and make sure it doesn't break? I said, don't worry. I said, I finished the whole thing. It looks great. And it won't break because I was so smart. I went to Michael's. I got a wooden egg. And they're like, oh, my gosh, you can't do that. This is sponsored by the American Poultry Association. It's got to be a real egg.
Oh, it had to be a real egg? Yep. So who contacted you? How did?
It was Mr. and Mrs. Bush's secretary at that time.
Wow, really?
And then so I had to then redo an egg. I mean, I must have blown 3 or 4 eggs trying to get them without breaking. Finally got one that didn't break. Well, sure enough, about 3/4 of the way through the painting, it broke. I'm trying to figure out how to make this thing not break. So I finally painted one that didn't break.
But couldn't you hard boil it?
Yeah.
Oh,
you don't cook much, do you?
He had scrambled eggs every day that week.
Yes. No,
I
got a dirty look just to let all our listeners know.
And they said, you have got to ship this in the morning. We need it the following day for the big ceremony.
Wow.
So I stayed up all night. I painted it. And I went to 7-Eleven. I got a coffee. I'm trying to figure out how am I going to package this thing without breaking. And I'm sitting there looking at my coffee cup, the big plastic hard coffee cup.
Yeah.
Well, I cleaned that out. I put toilet paper on the egg. I put it down in the cup. I taped
and
it.
And that's how the White House got it.
I shipped the 7-Eleven cup. And they called me and they said, we got it.
Yeah.
Unusual packaging, but it's in good shape.
Now, was there a certain way you had to paint it, or did they leave that up to you?
You know, they had artists from every state paint, wanted to represent their state. So a lot of people do something that the state was known for. And, you know, our state reptile was a painted turtle. And I've always loved the painted turtle. So I decided to do a little painted turtle looking, look, it's breaking out of the egg. Like it's actually hatching.
Oh, wow. So, what an experience.
Did they put him on the lawn, like I said earlier?
No.
And the kids went look for him.
Right. They have an Easter egg, huh? Oh,
this one broke.
Okay, so since these eggs weren't... You know, they were real. Mm-hmm. They had to throw them away. They got rotten.
No. We clean them out. Once you're able to get them out of there, you wash water through them.
Oh, you took the yolk out.
Right. Yeah.
Oh,
you pop
I missed
a hole
that
in the
part.
Bottom.
Yeah,
oh,
I've done
I
that.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've done that before.
I couldn't get it out over and over. And finally, somebody said, take a syringe. So I just put a syringe up there and sucked all the yolk out of it, which it's the first egg I've ever done. So,
what's the big? I mean, of all of the awards and those types of things that you've done, what's the one you most
Well, I won the Michigan duck stamp competition.
Yes, talk about that.
That one it's a crazy story. I competed in it for about 10 years, and what happens is when you win the duck stamp, people that hunt ducks, they have to have that on their license. So it's mandatory through the state or the government to get that stamp. So they are sold at the post offices and all the major retails, Myers, and this and that. And then there's prints made and advertisement and interviews. So after 10 years, I finally was almost done with my duck stamp painting. And my wife, Colleen, at the time was pregnant. Well, she went into labor 2 months before she's supposed to.
Oh, wow.
So we were at U of M Hospital, and we're in the room, and they were giving her magnesium to keep her from having the babies. So I had to sit in this room about half the size of this in the dark. She couldn't have visitors, no loud noises, no lights on. And that went in for about 2 days. So finally my dad comes up, and he had made a little teeny easel. Oh. And a little light over that. He goes, I know you can win this competition.
Wow.
He says, so I sat there in the hospital room, and I finished the painting. And wow. My dad took it and delivered it to the competition. Now, the competition didn't happen for about 30 days. Well, then Colleen had the twins at about a pound each. And, you know, we went through spinal tests, blood transfusions, I mean, quite a few things.
Oh, wow.
And 30 days later, we were actually, on that day, my son Matthew had a spinal tap. So we came home that night, and I see the phone message thing bleeping. I'm like, oh, my God, it's the hospital again. Because we were there every day for, I think, April to September. And I press the button, and it says, Mike Monroe, you just won the Michigan duck stamp competition. So, you know, that helped offset some of the hospital bills, and it really kind of catapulted me in people's minds as a legitimate award-winning artist.
Bob talked about that. You know, he's always thought that is amazing. I mean, anybody that hunts, you know, really knows about that duck stamp.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great honor.
Well,
good timing.
Well, what's interesting, though, is listening to you talk about, you know, all your accomplishments. It's not like they happened overnight. I mean, you're saying, you know, after 10 years, after this, and I think that's what people forget when they're pursuing their dreams. Because, you know, as we're looking, like right now, I'm looking at this beautiful book that you gave me, Sleepy Snoozy. What is it? Cozy?
Cozy Koozie.
Cozy Koozie?
I'll bring you an early reader.
Yeah, please. But this is beautiful. And it took a long time to get to this point.
It takes about 4 months. Yeah. It takes about 4 months per book. But, yeah, years and years and years. I mean, I look at the paintings I did back when I was 18 or 20, and they don't compare to what I am doing now. So, I mean, back then I thought that was the best I could do. And as time goes on, you mature, you learn.
But are you saying that Buzzy isn't as good as a sleepy, snoozy,
Buzzy's
woozy?
Beautiful.
I guess we'll wait
Buzzy's
to see it in the
beautiful.
Sales.
No, but even it's not just improving the painting, but the networking and, you know, building that reputation. Because with anything else, especially I think with art, whether it's singing or you know, painting, it's not just how beautiful the product is, but it's selling yourself and getting out there and, you know, earning that reputation. I mean, that's the hard work.
Time.
I realized when I was young that nobody was going to do this for me.
Right.
And I was, in my mind, I think I was right, because now I've dealt with publishers and I've dealt with a lot of people in the business, and they really kind of, in my opinion, they leave you high and dry. They give you just enough to survive. And now I'm self-publishing my own books. Now I understand a lot of behind-the-scenes things. There's pros and cons to everything. There's more money in it when I self-publish, but a lot more work, a lot more risk.
Right.
You're not afraid of work, though.
Yeah, well, I have no hobbies.
Do you have an agent?
Or? No.
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 Me, myself, and I.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
So you've always been on your own, doing it on your own, then.
What would you tell a 20-year-old Mike?
Get a real job.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, you would not.
The difference is that when I was doing this, 18, 20, 25 years old, there were competitions like the duck stamp competition, which is now gone. The Michigan Artist of the Year competition, now gone. A lot of these things that were available to me to kind of catapult myself forward aren't there anymore. So everything's gone so high-tech, so computerized. I'm a face-to-face person. I go out to all these shows and schools, I shake hands, I meet people, I show them, I sell them.
The grassroots way.
Right. And I don't know about the younger generation. It seems like they're so into the computers or cell phones.
Yeah, everything's digital. I mean, it's all social media.
So I feel like I'm almost a dinosaur as far as the way I do it. So the younger generations, they're going to have their own way to do it. I just don't know. You know, I hear both good and bad stories about the high-tech selling. Oh, we did great. We sold thousands. Oh, we didn't get any response. So I think a hit and miss. The way I do it, face to face, really drops the odds of failure.
Yeah. Wow.
What's next?
My roof.
How about the drink?
Yeah.
Well, let me. I have another question for him. The Before I Die. Jackie brought to our attention a few shows ago. Jackie, you tell him about the Before I Die board.
Well, I wasn't done with the interview yet.
Oh, no, I wasn't. I'm not done either,
oh,
but I just
okay.
didn't want to.
Oh, okay.
Usually we get to the
one.
End. And
oh, all right.
No, you go ahead
so
and tell
the
about
Before
the
Before I Die board. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it started in New Orleans, I don't know how many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago or something like that. And it's a wall, and it says Before I Die, and people just walk by it and fill in, you know.
I want to.
Before I Die, I want to, whatever. And anyway, there are over 73 boards. No, they're in 73 countries. There are over 1,000 boards, and there's one here in Detroit on Woodward. And so, we had a show on what we would, you know, before we die, what we would want to accomplish. And
can I say my roof?
Your roof? Okay. Well, hey, listen, Denise said she wanted to pack lighter, so.
Yeah. No, I wanted to learn how to pack lighter.
Oh, you wanted to learn how to pack lighter. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
And look. Look around.
You know what? It's working.
I know. Before I die, you want to finish your roof?
No,
that?
I'm kidding.
That's all right. You can think about that one.
You know, I don't know if I have any real personal goals. I mean, as a parent, you want to make sure your kids are okay.
Right.
You know, I want to make sure that they finish their college, that, you know, they're getting a good start in life. I don't know. You know, I mean, we all have hopes and dreams of going places. Australia, go scuba diving, you know, hang gliding. I mean, I love all that stuff. I don't do it. I love it.
Yeah. Do you like to travel?
For fun. I mean, when I travel for the shows, which is all the time, that's a chore. It's a job. You're always worrying about your vehicle breaking down or bad traffic. You know, in the winter, I'm gone almost all January, February, March doing shows. And most of the shows I do are 4-day shows. So you're setting up on Wednesday. Show goes Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, getting home Monday. And, it's a chore.
Wow.
I wouldn't want to be a truck driver.
Oh, I say that all the time. What, do you ever get bored?
No. I get, overwhelmed. I'm juggling a lot of balls. But I think it makes it more exciting to do a lot of different things.
You would get bored if you didn't have all of that to juggle. And
so,
if there's ever a boring time, it takes me about a minute to get something else going.
Right. Yeah. I know.
So how did you get into illustrating children's books? When did that start?
I did a book with Carl Sams called Images of the Wild, all about photos, wildlife photos. And they needed somebody to do the sketching, little drawings that they didn't have photos of. So I did that, and then the company Sleeping Bear Press contacted me after and asked me if I'd do the book Emmett's for Mitten. And I remember at that point, I actually thought it was almost an insult they called me to do that. Because I thought, here, I'm selling to galleries in New York, in Chicago, I've got this big clientele list. I just won the duck stamp, and, you know, I'm trying to sell paintings for thousands of dollars. So I went home. I said, thanks, but no thanks. So I went home. I told my wife about the offer, and my wife said, you know, you should do a book our kids could enjoy. And people wonder why I turned that offer down to begin with. And let me help you understand that. Normally you get paid, let's say, 50 cents a book. Well, they project they're going to sell between 2,500 and 5,000 copies. Well, if they sold 5,000 copies, that would be a $2,500 check for 5 months' worth of work. So it didn't make financial sense to do the book.
Okay.
Well, I decided to do the book anyway. I thought I'd do one book that my kids could enjoy. And that book sold 50,000 copies in the first 6 months.
Wow.
So suddenly it was, you know, a money-making thing.
Right.
And I figured, because I assumed I'd only do that book, I decided to put my heart and soul into the paintings and just do something that my kids would be proud to look at or show off. And I think because I put the extra work into it, I think it paid off in the sales.
And then you met that wonderful author.
My wife.
Well, no. So after Buzzy wasn't after.
Yeah.
Right after.
Yep, mm-hmm.
Oh wow! And you're still doing this, huh?
Yeah.
And you 26 books. 20
after beating you.
26 books you've illustrated, and how many of them have you done on your own?
You mean self-published?
Yes.
I self-published 6.
Okay, and you'll continue to do that.
I mean, I'm working with Sleeping Bear Press. They're a nice company, and it's got its advantages because, they're going to publicize it. They're going to put my name out there. Things that I don't really, I don't put out any catalogs. You know, I'm not real great on the website. I do have a website, but I think working with a publisher offers you other things besides money. I don't think the money is why you want to be with a publisher. Like Denise is a public speaker. So they provide her a product that she can take to her speaking engagements.
Right.
When I self-publish, I'm producing a product at, you know, maybe 50% less than I can buy it from a publisher.
Right.
And so I'm actually out there selling products.
So when you say you self-publish, that means an author will send you their manuscript?
No. Basically, my wife and I have done all six books together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And
Colleen is the author of the book that was read.
A Wish to Be a Christmas Tree.
Right. And so has she always been a writer?
No. She she graduated from U of M with a degree in literature and English.
Okay.
And then after our twins were born, after I did the Mitten book and Buzzy, Sleeping Bear Press put out a little notice to everybody, said, hey, we're looking for a Christmas book. So I just said to my wife, you have a degree from U of M in literature and English. It seems like you could write a kid's book.
Wow.
So I kind of pestered her about that for, I think it was at least a month. And she tells me that one day she put the twins down for a nap, and she wrote the book in about 2 hours.
And that book was her first book, and that went national like that?
Yeah, I mean, so it's sold hundreds of thousands.
As authors, we hate when she tells that story because that's so not the norm.
No kidding. That's amazing.
She's a real get-to-it-and-get-it-done person. She's not going to do daily around.
Why don't we have her on the show?
She actually has a job.
Right. And she doesn't – that's not her passion.
No. Nope. No.
And, she doesn't like
She writing. Only writes really? When I ask her or need something.
Or wiggle your tail at her.
I literally get hundreds of authors coming to me every year, and I just don't know what to do, how to help them, because there's 100 different ways to do a book, whether it's with a publisher, whether it's self-publishing, whether it's going on Amazon. And what do you want to get out of it? Do you want to have a book you can show your family? Do you want to make hard cash?
Right.
Do you want to make a percentage? It's extremely complicated answer, and I, you know, at some point I'd like to do a little book that just simplifies that for people, hand them the book instead of me rattling on for
an hour. That's probably a good idea,
because they have that deer in the headlight look when we're done,
right.
And I don't blame them. It's a very complicated business, but my thing is I'm very passionate about it.
Now, what about the
author?
I got
really lucky that he illustrated Buzzy the Bumblebee.
Right.
When you look back and do the connect the dots things that I talk about, I mean, how it came about it's pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
Well, I was lucky to do the books. I mean, it's something I turned down, and maybe it just meant to be.
Wow.
You do a fabulous job, and I guess the part that, coming from wildlife, I remember, you know, I know what your wildlife work looks like, and then to see the creativity that you and the imagination that you have to create something like A Wish to Be a Christmas Tree or Buzzy the Bumblebee or whatever it is, it's amazing to me.
I'm lucky I can do something photorealistic, or I can do something real whimsical and imaginative. Bright colors, subdued colors. I mean, that's what keeps it interesting. I'll spend 4 or 5 months working on a book, and when I'm done with that, I like to go back to my realistic wildlife art for a while. Mm-hmm. Maybe build a little sculpture or something, then go back to a book.
Do you feel more comfortable with wildlife?
Oh, yeah. It's secondhand. I can literally... I can be on the phone talking and just paint.
You used to love to
subconscious.
Talk. Yes.
Denise and I used to talk on the phone for hours when I painted. While I was illustrating Buzzy.
Wow. Because he said, let me interrupt you. I always thought this was because I have to completely focus to do almost anything. He liked to not focus, that he preferred to just talk and not think about what he was doing.
It's your subconscious.
And then he produced these gorgeous pictures. Like, how did you do that while you were talking?
But so, for
or maybe
example,
I was talking.
I was listening a lot.
Yeah. When you get a manuscript, does the author give you an idea of what they want, or do you read the story and what comes to you is what you...
No, I've actually never worked with any authors. I've worked with Denise, and we used to get together once a week or so and go over things. And even my wife doesn't want to actually see anything. She just hands me a manuscript and wants me to do whatever I'm going to do. When I'm working with a publisher, I don't meet – I haven't met half the authors I've worked with or talked to them. So they, I don't think they really want you to. They want to work with each one of the – you know, the publisher wants to work with the author, and the publisher wants to work with the illustrator. I don't think they want them collaborating.
Okay. And so tell us about your studio. When did you open the studio?
I've had – years and years ago, I used to work, one of those guys that worked at home and get up late and wear the sweats around. And I just thought to myself, if I'm going to do this as a business, I need to make it a real business. So I rented a location downtown Brighton, and I started, I made sure I was up and going just like a business, whether I wanted to or not. And as time went on, I had one studio for about 15 years. and then decided to build a building on Main Street in Brighton.
Oh wow!
So.
Do you sell the books there? What isn't the studio?
I call it more like my pit stop. People think I paint there. I really paint at home.
Okay.
I have a studio upstairs in my garage at home. So the building downtown is for shipping. We ship books out of there every day to stores. We frame pictures for ourselves or other people.
So it's open to the public?
We're open Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, or okay. by appointment, because I'm really on the road Friday through Monday.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, people come down. I feel bad. It's not a beautiful store. It's not really set up. You know, I've got things in boxes because we're taking them from one show to the next.
Yeah.
So my primary place to sell is the shows. The studio is kind of like, well, what are you looking for? We'll dig it out of a box somewhere.
Okay. And so how can people find you? You have a website, Facebook.
Facebook. My wife runs our Facebook like a pro.
And what's the name?
We need her. Oh, no, we have Becca.
Well, yeah.
Oh, there you go, replacing. First, you replace Bella.
Facebook. Oh, Michael Monroe on Facebook.
So Michael Monroe, they can look up.
That's a great Facebook. I mean, website.
Yeah. It's a nice website. I don't know how to work it, but
that's okay.
Yeah, welcome to our world.
Yeah.
I had my kids help me.
Yeah, no. Well, so any last thing you want to tell us? What advice would you give to someone that wants to be an artist and make a living doing it?
The one thing that really helped me out was getting on the coattails of Carl Sands. He really knew what he was doing. He's a pro at it. I watch, I observe, so I emulated what he did. And whatever field you're going into, I think you should do that.
Have a mentor.
Yeah, have a mentor.
That's good advice.
Just not me. Unless you want a roof.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, we're coming over to help you on that roof today, just to let you know.
We are?
Yeah, well, gosh, Mike, we really appreciate it.
Fantastic.
I know you're so busy and that you took the time to do this.
Thank you.
We really appreciate
it. Now, do you know what Picasso's last dying words were?
No, but I do have a quote here by Pablo Picasso.
You don't know what his last dying words were?
No, what were they?
Well, let's think about it for a minute.
We don't have that much time.
Blank. Though. Go ahead.
Drink to me.
Oh. Uh-huh. Well, you know the one I was going to say.
Yep.
Every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain one once grown.
That's a good one.
It is a good one. Pablo Picasso said that, and that's what I think you've done.
Yeah.
I never matured?
No, you've learned how to remain true to your passion and your talents and your strengths and yet make a business out of it. I mean, you are all those things I said in the beginning. You're an artist, but you're a businessman. You're an entrepreneur. You're an amazing father and an amazing husband. I'm sure Colleen would agree with that, right?
Oh, I don't know about that. I have to tattoo my anniversary on my hand.
Well, unfortunately, we have to wrap this up. We always say, we need 2 hours.
I know. But we do have to stick with our tradition. We have the fortune cookies. And what is the sip on this today?
Why don't you toss our cookies?
Okay.
And we'll give Mike his fortune cookies. And I'm going to tell everybody about
toss them up.
Oh, I see mine right there.
Yep. That one's Mike's. And this one is yours, Jessica. And this one's mine.
So we
and
have
the tradition
a,
is, just oh, real ahead. Quick, again, whichever way the prongs were facing means that fortune was meant for you. So now you have to read it. And are we going to do it the ninja way or no?
We had the ninjas on last week?
No. 2 weeks ago.
Mike, I think we told you about them. They were crazy dudes. And they made us read our fortunes and then end it with in bed. Okay? So read your fortune and then add in bed.
Mine says never answer Denise's phone call.
In bed.
A gathering of friends brings you lots of luck this evening. In bed. In an orgy.
Go ahead, Jessica.
It says, be on the lookout for coming events. They cast their shadows beforehand. In bed?
Oh, gosh. Okay. This weekend will bring you a surprise in bed.
You knew it was going to be good when you started with, oh, gosh.
John is listening. Okay, mine is happier days are definitely ahead for you. Struggle has ended in bed. Okay, quickly, our sip on this segment.
Yes.
I mixed up rum chata, one part of rum chata, and two parts of Three Olives Loopy Vodka, and then put lots of ice, stirred it up, gave it to everybody before we started the show, and that's why we sound a little loopy.
Loopy, it's good. I don't think we needed the loopy part in there.
My tongue was having a hard time introducing Mike, so I apologize for that. But you set us straight, as always. And
yes. Okay, so thank you, Mike, for being here. It was great.
For having me.
Next week, we have Karen Hubbard in the corner with K-Hub. Her show's on Tuesday nights from 9 to 11.
Yep.
And so she's going to be with us next week, so that's going to be a great show. And
looking forward to it.
We do have, well, we're going to end with a song today. And what do you listen to, Mike, when you draw?
Well, it depends. Like when I'm doing the kids, I listen to Disney songs.
Do you really?
Yep. And then other times I do kind of the 80s rock and roll.
What's your favorite song?
I love Bob Seger.
What? Which one?
Roll Away With Me.
So that's what we're going to close
Roll
the show
away with
me tonight.
In bed.
In bed. Yeah. Wow, Denise.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again. And remember, sometimes your only available transportation
is a leap of faith.
Thanks for taking a leap of faith with us. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Happy Hump Day.
This is a previously recorded episode. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.